This is Torch columnist Sean Madigan, joined by my co-host Derek Bergen for your edition of an ROH exclusive audio for Saturday, September the 20th, 2008. Derek, how are you?
That sounded like a guess, Sean. I'm doing good. The question is, how are you doing? Have you dug yourself out of the snow?
I got out of the, managed to get out of the driveway today, and they dumped a foot of snow, and kind of a stuck inside for most of the day yesterday, and it's officially hit the fan here in the East Coast, at least.
In the West Coast, have you been listening or reading Brian Alvarez's rants on the Pacific Northwest and the snow dropped on them?
No, I didn't see any of that. I was deeply involved in the when I do have free time in the creation of my Best of ROH 2008 Top 15 list, the groundbreaking new series of articles to close the year on the Torch.
Groundbreaking, not unlike digging a grave, right? But, Sean, on your complaints about this winter, which you've done it almost on print and on Facebook, are you shocked? Because that was one of my things when Brian's keep ranting about snow and everything. I mean, this happens every year. Why is it always like a surprise? When I lived in New Hampshire for almost my whole life, it was the same panic, the same, oh, my God, the world's coming to an end, you know, that day after tomorrow scenario from that movie. It's just, you know, it's going to be gone by Tuesday. Why does everyone react like it's Armageddon?
Well, this one's pretty bad, so you got to give people credit, the benefit of the doubt here, because not only is it still snowing right now, but it's supposed to get heavier tomorrow and dump another 2 to 4 inches.
Oh, no. Snow. That's all it is. John, I'm down here in Florida now.
Okay, hop in your car and try to get out down here.
I see Cuba, and I see Haiti, and all these Dominican republics, and every single fall, they get destroyed by hurricanes and these winds. And then you guys are up there crying because it's 32 degrees, and your feet are cold, and your nose is cold, and your ears are falling off. And boo-hoo, it's hard to drive. You at least can drive.
I think you just need to come down here and live in the conditions instead of sitting up there in your sunny palace.
That's right. The heat miser rules the world down here. All right. Enough about the weather channel. Let's
talk more about the list.
Let's talk more about the top 15 list. It's getting a lot of attention on the ROHWrestling.com forums and our favorite PW Torch free forums.
Yes, and today we're about to hit the top 10, and I'm sure be up for a lot of heated debate, especially in the ROH forum, judging by the incredibly attention to detail reaction from some people.
Can you get the number 10 match on this audio? Let's hear it.
The number 10 match is Nigel McGuinness versus El Generico from Age of Insanity from August 14th, I believe, of this summer. Main event. Great, great, great main event. Gets a spot in the top 10. It was shockingly good. And it's one of those great McGuinness. If you made a best of Nigel McGuinness title defense, this would definitely be one of the matches you'd put on there for crowd heat, and McGuinness just being the prick heel, and it's a shame because you can't really tell that the building isn't holding all that many people the way it's shot, and it's a shame because those Cleveland fans are really, really into the product, and really the ones that do support it really got into it, and it's too bad they can't go back there.
Yeah, I mean, I think about Nigel and his title offenses, like you said. I mean, a best of would be great. I don't want to say he's unheralded because a lot of people know he's one of the best guys in wrestling right now, but certainly as a Ring of Honor himself, when we think of great Ring of Honor title runs, we think of Bryan Danielson, we think of Samoa Joe, and whereas Nigel is down with the Austin Aries type run, which was, you know, was okay itself too. Whereas Nigel really has been spectacular, but because he's shadowing two of the best wrestlers ever and two incredibly great runs that were, you know, well wrestled and well booked, it's hard to compete. But I think if you objectively stack them against each other, say 5 years from now, Joe Montana will be number one or number two. I mean, this is just an incredible run against some of the best opponents Ring of Honor's ever had to face each other.
Yeah, and it's too bad that he's just not a draw as champion, because he certainly is deserving of recognition, but I think people just aren't into most of his challenges outside of Danielson, and I think it's a shame, because the Tyler they really never pulled the trigger on a Tyler Black feud with him, Kevin Steen had one or two really good matches with him, and it just seems like these guys, Steen and Generico, aren't really getting the benefit of the doubt as challengers, and it's too bad. He certainly hasn't had the storyline support of the Joe and Danielson runs when they, they had all these challengers lined up, and it's too bad, because he's, despite that, he's put on numerous excellent matches against, a variety of opponents, which is a huge compliment to him, because,
But how do you think, Sean, in my much fabled criticism of the ROH pay-per-view model, which everyone's awaiting their breath to read, how has the pay-per-view, the booking of them, affected every other show? Because we pretty much knew, or I shouldn't say we knew, Bryan Danielson didn't end up beating Nigel, but the storylines through all the pay-per-views was Danielson had to beat these foes in order to finally get Nigel. So as a wrestling fan, when you're going to Dayton or Cleveland or wherever, you know he's not losing the belt to Necro, or he's not losing it to Tyler Black, because he has to face Danielson, 3 months from now at a pay-per-view. Do you think the awkward booking of regular shows compared to the pay-per-view only affect how people saw the Danielson, the McGinnis matches, because they, in theory, there's just no way he's going to lose, because it just destroyed the pay-per-view booking? I mean, do you think that affected that they just didn't take the Roderick Strong's? They just knew this title wasn't going to change hands because of what was going on in the pay-per-view storylines.
I think it has a little bit, but I think more of it is the type of challengers he's facing, and those challengers not being over with the DVD buying audience, because in the past, we've had situations in ROH where the storylines clearly point to a title changing hands in one destination, and yet the fans still buy into all the matches in between. If you watch the Generico McGinnis match, all those fans thought that Generico was going to somehow pull that match out, even though the storyline direction was clearly heading towards the Chicago pay-per-view like 2 or 3 months later. And if you remember the homicide, the whole CCW-ROH storyline, I mean, they held that for the last 6 months of Danielson's title reign. And yet in between, he still had all these great matches with McGinnis and so forth that people didn't give up on. So I think it's more of a case of having great challengers, and the booking certainly doesn't help, because I think, I don't know why, but like it seemed like a guy like Strong, even though he had a really good match with McGinnis, like people are more apt to say no to that than when a guy like Generico comes out of nowhere and is seemingly on the verge of victory, and they believe it for that. So I think it's a combination of things, and that's one of them.
Strong is a hard guy to get on. I mean, he does have great matches, and there's been a lot of times I've loved it. But I remember back at WrestleMania weekend in Chicago, I think it was a 56-57-minute match against Bryan Danielson. And parts of it were great. Other parts, it's death. He just doesn't have that it factor that I think the top ROH stars have. And I think he's been pushed in all the big spots. I think he's given chance after chance. The guy probably busts his ass outside of the ring. Clearly he's a loyal and a diehard fan of the company, but he's just not at that level, Sean, that I think other guys that have that charisma. You just said, Steen and Generico, they're probably not even close to the workers, really. Roderick Strong go move by move and how they work a match, but they just connect with fans in a way that he never will. And it's a shame to say that, because he seems like a really nice guy, but Roderick Strong is just that he's not at that level. And I don't know if he ever will be.
I think he's the type of guy that's really good to be a strong challenger to the title, but I think he's almost, I think the best I saw him was when he was tagging with Evans and Austin Aries, and get him at the top of the card, and that, because when he's one half of a unit and the other half is over with the crowd, he seems to do awfully well in situations like that.
Could you make a comparison him to players Arn Anderson? Like, I mean, people just remember Arn Anderson so much better than maybe he probably was, just because he was so serviceable in his part, and Rick carried the promos, carried this direction, and so you didn't get to see his weaknesses, because we know every time I think Roderick Strong shoots a promo, especially the heel, it just makes him look like a complete goof. When he's in the ring, though, when he's doing near falls, I mean, he's just so good at everything in the ring that, I mean, technically he's one of the most proficient guys they have. And I think you're right, as a unit, strength really come to the surface.
I think that it's too early to say that about him. I think he's so young that he still has all this time to grow still.
Yeah.
But, you know, for right now, it's kind of a parallel comparison. I don't think he's quite as bland as Anderson was, but I think he's someone who needs to be in an environment where he's cutting a lot of promos, and I think he needs to just be a straightforward ass-kicking type of character, and not try to make him too cocky one way as a heel and too overly friendly as a babyface. I think that middle ground serves him well, and I think I don't know. I saw him cut one really good promo on FIP, and probably not many people saw it during the Eric Stevens feud. I think he needs to be working somewhere where he's constantly cutting promos and he's, you know, constantly involved in strong feuds. I think that would serve him to get better and better.
Good points.
Because I'd love to see him back in a tag team with Jack Evans too, as well, or something. Cause I hope ROH brings Evans back, because I think I saw that he's been PWG, and I think I've seen that Rocky Romero's been PWG and guys like that. So
I don't know if I dreamed this, but I thought I read in the Wrestling Observer, or maybe it was on a website, that Teddy Hart was let go from AAA, which I think AAA, whoever when they're down there, him and Jack Evans are with. And if he was let go, then, I mean, maybe Jack Evans now has more time. Either he's going to get a stronger push in AAA, or maybe allow him to work more Ring of Honor and stuff. So I could have just invented that story, though, but I thought I read that that Hart was
in
promotion.
I didn't hear that, but I don't know. Could be true. But
either the wrestling needs more Jack Evans. That's one of my building blocks of other feuds.
Yeah, because that PWG DVD deal, I went ahead and got a bunch of shows, and one of them has Strong and Evans reunited, and another one has Strong and Pac from the UK tagging together. So it's I think Strong is really a really great tag wrestler, and also a really good singles wrestler as well. So,
yeah.
But
he's not. That's everything, Sean.
He just doesn't connect with the fans at the level at a level equal to his what he does in the ring yet.
Yeah.
Maybe
he is like, you know, who just passed away, Steve Bradley for WWE.
Yeah.
And there's Dr. Pritchard, who Wade always loved. There's guys that seem to be great trainers because they have every tool. They know how to explain it. You know, they know everything about wrestling. Just they can't be that main event star because they don't, you know, that quality that you can't really quantify that The Rock has and Steve Austin have and Nigel has and Brian Tatum has. And maybe Roderick Strong will show it. You know, he hasn't yet. And like I said, he's a really good guy if he does. But maybe he's just one of those guys that should be the ROH trainer forever, because he can teach these kids how to have great matches, and hopefully they can develop that promo and that charisma on their own. But you're right, he's really young, and he's hanging around. I think he lives with Matt Sydal and Colt Cabana down here in Florida, so he's certainly around people, you know, have already gone to the top, and I hope they share with him some secrets and he can catch fire.
All right, let's move on. Former ROH booker Gabe Sapolsky posted the rest of his booking snafu blog in relation to some things that went on this past year leading up to his, I think, one of his last shows that he actually worked on was Glory by Honor 7. And he talked about how he wanted to use the Steel Cage Warfare match to get over the Necro Butcher, and talked about how nothing came into his, he used the term, he used to get ideas exploding into his head, and he talked about going to Japan and how nothing came into his head, and then he ended up, after a discussion with the Briscoes, switching it to them getting over in the end to lead into their feud with Steen and Generico that he had planned. And well, what was your reaction to the snafu where Necro ended up being the odd man out in terms of being in the match, and then ended up just kind of, as Gabe said, cluttering things up while he was in there?
So, Derek, what did you think of Gabe's final booking snafu?
Well, it's, I found it confusing because I don't understand a couple of things, like how he didn't know until the day of the show, or maybe it was after the show, I can't remember how he phrased it, that Necro was going to be over in Philadelphia. It just, it seems unfathomable, you know, to me. I mean, I think the guy's a cult favorite since Ring of Honor since the day he started, you know, literally. I just think he has something about him, we just talked about in our previous segment, that you can't quantify, that he connects with people that nobody else does. And it's shocking to me that that didn't hit Gabe and that he would detract from the match in the ring, because you want to be seeing Age of the Fall settle their feud, or I should say the Briscoes settle their feud with Age of the Fall, this gigantic storyline in Ring of Honor, and instead me and I assume many, many other fans were more interested in Necro Butcher. And I think Necro, in the larger scheme of things, he shouldn't have been added to any of this, because I think when he interrupted the Aries versus Jacobs battle, it really became about him, because now that you add him to the mix, the fans' allegiance, whether you liked Aries or whether you liked Jimmy Jacobs, well, now you like this guy because he's better than both of them, or at least as a fan, you connect to him more. So I think it's not his last booking snafu. I think it was a snafu for months, and which you should have been involved in this, and in particular this last match. And I'm bewildered at how Gabe didn't coming from a mile away. What about you?
I haven't watched it play it out, but just I've seen some of it, but it seemed like once Necro got involved, it kind of convoluted the Jacobs Aries storyline. I don't know. All I could think of is, I think it just seemed like towards the end, Gabe was having a hard time, you know, coming up, focusing his ideas, seemed like it, the schedule just got heavy on him during the period leading up to that Steel Cage Warfare match, and I think that's what happened.
Yeah, we're talking how 6 full years or longer than that, or that's just an amazing run by one booker, and you can tell very little input from anyone else, especially since Rob Feinstein and Doug Gentry left.
My way.
Yeah, exactly. They were bogging me down. But that's a lot of workload on your shoulders, and it's just amazing that we don't have example after example of gigantic fuckers. I mean, this isn't even a huge one. It's really surprising he didn't see something obvious coming, and a lot of credit goes out to him for that. And we're going to discuss in a coming segment about the ROH and the workload it involves, and I'm really amazed he did as well as he did for as long as he did. Hope we see him turn up somewhere else, you know, if not Ring of Honor, you know, someday soon, because he has a lot to give to wrestling.
Yeah, because this isn't even like a huge deal, but this is, you know, this is a guy who had all his ducks in a row for, you know, a long time, you know what I mean? And everything made sense, and little things from behind played up in the future, and
I am a little troubled by when he said that he was obviously a planner, but he said that he's big about the explosions in his head, and he was almost like counting on that, it seemed. Like it was such a regular occurrence. And it was, if you watch Heroes the first season, It's like the drug addict, who Isaac Mendez, who couldn't paint a picture without being loaded. And it was just weird to hear Gabe say that, as meticulous as he is as a writer, and certainly he's been around good wrestling, you know, his whole adult life with ECW and Ring of Honor, that he needs to have these flashes of brilliance rather than coming to a logical conclusion, like this step leads to this, and oh yeah, now this and this and this. And it seems like a lot of his best ideas, from what he's saying, like he'd just be sitting there and it hit him all at once. And I thought that was a weird revelation for him to make.
This conference is being recorded.
So, what did you mean by an odd occurrence, just to clarify, about Gabe's revelations?
I just see Gabe as like wrestling version of Alan Moore, who I think is comic book's best writer, and you're going to see him next year in The Watchmen, the movie, based on the Watchmen comic, which I think you've read, Sean, or if not, you should go out and get immediately.
I haven't finished it, but I've read and watched parts of the first half of it.
Watch it's a comic book, Sean. You don't
the
watch
motion,
any...
the oh, motion okay. comic on iTunes.
Okay. Well, anyway, I have the Watchmen Absolute Edition, which is the gigantic one, and it has Alan Moore's scripts and his plots and everything, how he writes. And to me, I always pictured Gabe as like Alan Moore, with these insanely detailed notes he must have, like the boat. I think you're going to Gabe's house will be like when the cops break down the door in Seven, and they find, you know, this heavy metal music playing, and you got these psychotic, you know, notebooks filled with insane details on wrestling matches. And I just figured Gabe was so in depth as a writer that, you know, he just had everything planned, you know, months and years in advance. He had all these storylines worked out to the absolute most minor detail, and it was just strange. I just never even thought that these ideas could just hit him at once. You know, that he was kind of just going along with the rest of us, with obviously a lot of good ideas, but was waiting for that flash of brilliance. And it was a very interesting read on his blog, no doubt.
Yeah, I thought just, you know, like as we suspected, that maybe it was just catching up to him at the time, the schedule and the years and the, you know, I would think he's lasted longer than anyone would expect in terms of being able to be so creative, and maybe it just came to a, you know, just an end for him at that, you know, maybe even before that, and he's just not saying it, you know what I mean?
I don't know if you're privy to this, Sean, but was he also like the talent coordinator? Because it doesn't seem like he's WWE, where they have the writing staff who really don't even talk to the talent or communicate with them to some degree. Gabe, I mean, seemed to me that he's like booking some people, you know, setting some arrangements, you know, personally dealing with all of them on a level. So you not only have all this booking going on that you have to mastermind,
mm-hmm.
but you're also the talent liaison and all the politics and all the feuds you got to settle, you know, the backstage quarrels. And that's a lot for anyone to handle. I mean, that's just ridiculous.
Yeah, I believe he also did that stuff as well. And so it's a huge job. And, you know, I think he was, you know, he basically was ROH while he was there, which is, you know.
If anyone was identified with one company other than Vince McMahon, I mean, it's Gabe. And when you thought of Ring of Honor, you thought of Gabe Sapolsky. I mean, no doubt, over anyone.
And he was doing FIP as well. So to... Yeah. You know, now we're looking at almost 70 shows a year almost. That's a good, I mean, this is the stuff we've been waiting for to hear from Gabe for years and years. And, you know, I recommend everyone going over that's myspace.com/ROH Gabe and, you know, checking these things out, because this is the stuff people want to hear years ago, like when the, ROH CZW feud went down, and you know, he was really a buzzworthy guy, and he'd go on these he'd talk to Wade or Brian Alvarez or whoever, and he'd basically say next to nothing in terms of insight. And
complaint is the MySpace blog format, which is one of the most annoying things to read. I know that yesterday you sent me a link to Claudio's MySpace blog, and it's just mind-numbingly, you know, you're just like reading lines and lines of text with just, it's just a bad format to write in. And I would like to see Gabe be on a more easier on the eyes format or something like that. Just MySpace is so 1999 as a person who just joined Facebook 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, you're one to
MySpace
talk.
MySpace is dead, because I'm the second to last to make the jump. Apparently Gabe and Claudio are the last. But it's time to move away. The site is just, it's not a good one anymore.
Looks like he just,
he's right on your heels with Facebook because the sign up date is the 27th of February from this year.
There we go. Me and Gabe are more alike than either one of us want to admit.
That's why the sparks fly when you do two in this. At least you didn't set them off like Dr. Keith. But, let's move on to Adam Pearce curtailing his duties as Mike Johnson broke the news last week on PWInsider.com, and I've since confirmed it, and Dave Meltzer has since confirmed it as well, that Adam Pearce will no longer be doing the Friday night shows, and he's also, I guess, Austin Aries has gained a lot of power and will be handling the locker room on Friday night, and any talent complaints will be forwarded to Larry Sweeney, and I wonder if they can call his hotline, and maybe they get a voice recording from Sweet and Sour Incorporated that they're not taking any of their complaints right now. And so you're basically looking at a situation where you go to through someone who handled everything, and you know, I report some things in the Torch newsletter that's almost like the a situation where the inmates are running the asylum now. You went from one man to having, you know, absolute and total control. And as I report at first, Carrie Silkin now has a ton of say in the creative product and is very happy about that. And now you're looking at Austin Aries with his hand in the pot, Larry Sweeney with his hand in the pot, and Adam Pearce seemingly not realizing what a hard job it was, you know, drastically scaling back on his time in the company. I believe someone said it was had to do with him having his regular full-time job and, you know, kids and family to tend to. So apparently
I thought that was the best line in the Wrestling Observer this week, was unprepared for the workload of a booking job. It's just, I'm just like, what is going on in that company that this is probably one of the three biggest roles you need to fill when you're trying to do a successful wrestling company. You got to have a booker who knows what's going on and is fully prepared. You know, you got to have the marketing, and you know, you got to have your product look good, let alone the wrestlers. And it's just like they just gave it to somebody who had no idea of what he was stepping into. And it's like when you're at a company, which, I mean, if everyone's going down, Ring of Honor is going down too. To what degree, we don't know. I mean, is that really the time you want to put someone in who is? I don't know. Could this be another kayfabe story that they're just saying this, that he's overwhelmed, because it kind of makes him look like an idiot, you know, and that he's not going to Friday night shows? I mean, just like, it's ridiculous. Is it to set us up that Adam Pearce is basically going to be relieved of his duties, Sean, by February? You know what I mean? It's kind of like the first step. Like, he's being phased out. I mean,
I don't think he's phasing. He's phasing himself out, though, it seems like. And I don't know. I think the bottom line is it doesn't matter who's in charge of creative. All that matters is that Carrie Silkin keeps funding this company and he's happy. And, you know, after years where Gabe had, you know, total control, you know, now Carrie has his say in the booking. And, you know, as I reported before, that he's very high on, we can get to it later, but he's very high on Jerry Lynn, and we're seeing that start to play out.
But is Ring of Honor falling into the trap that we constantly hear Wade Keller and Bruce Mitchell and Dave Meltzer, they're booking for an audience of one, and how much that has killed wrestling since the Monday Night Wars? Because they're not booking for the audience anymore. They're booking for the boss, and that kills the company, because the boss is not in the audience. He's not buying a ticket. He's not as a fan anymore. They're seeing it from a totally different position than the people who are getting money out of their back pocket to buy tickets. And that could be
exactly
the quickest thing. You know, I just – it's scary to read stuff like that in The Observer and The Torch and listening to you on audios. That I just hope we're not seeing Ring of Honor go down a path where there's just no return from.
Well, you know, he wanted to shut it, you know, down. He wanted to shut the whole thing down, you know, back in, you know, around September, October, from what I understand. So this, you know, this is about a group of people trying to keep their jobs and a group of wrestlers trying to keep their paydays. And, from what I understand, and, you know, keeping Carrie happy is priority number one right now. And you know, he's the one who funds the company. I mean, there's no other investors in it. You know, it's just him out of pocket, you know, making sure these shows go on, these DVDs come out. And so, I mean, it sounds like a real catch-22 situation right now.
I just hope that Ring of Honor fans, who are the first to knock TNA and to criticize people in TNA, can look themselves in the mirror now that a lot of the things that are happening in TNA and why they happen are happening within Ring of Honor. And I don't want to say Ring of Honor is getting a free pass, but they're really not being critically attacked like all of us do to TNA, because there's so many smart people in that company, just like you just said. They're turning the other way because they want to keep their jobs. They want to keep that paycheck coming in. And in the long run, is that good for any company, wrestling or otherwise? I guess we're going to find out in 2009.
It's a very tenuous situation, and as far as I know, and it's tough. It's a tough situation with the declining sales, and you know.
But
maybe
are they declining because you're appealing to the boss? You know what I mean? It's hard to be that.
No, I mean, I meant before. I'm talking about before Gabe was fired, you know, with the declining sales and some bad attendance. And I think what you're looking at is, you know, I think the first phase is going to be maybe, I mean, the best case scenario is that Carrie gets involved, and if it doesn't work, then, you know, maybe he sees that, and then maybe he goes to a plan B where he realizes this, you know, he has his hands in the booking, and he realizes that, you know, his ideas aren't what his fans want to see. So, you know, the first two DVDs just came out from the first two shows from, you know, when Pierce took over. So, you know, I think it's going to take, you know, maybe another round of the DVDs before, you know, maybe Carrie starts to get the idea of whether or not people are going to gravitate to, his vision, because it's, you know, it's just starting to come out on DVD, so it's going to take some time, I think, before we either see this continue to happen, or it continues and it goes into the ground, or it continues and they make changes.
Yeah, well, we reviewed the really strong Kayfabe Commentaries DVD, guest booker with Kevin Sullivan, or no, it wasn't a guest booker, it was him going over the death of WCW, and he kept talking about he needed more time, and then he talked about, well, they kind of confronted him, well, what would you have done? And he had plans like, a year from now, I would have had Goldberg as the main face, Psycho Sid as the main heel, and then I just think in my mind, well, that wasn't going to work anyway. You know, so your long-term plan kind of sucks, and I hope that plan B for Ring of Honor isn't Bushwhacker Luke. You know, well, we don't need Adam Pearce, so I got my other friend who's booked in Puerto Rico 25 years ago with Abdul the Butcher versus Carlos Colon, and think that's going to be relevant to an audience in 2009. And
I
hope there's other stuff we haven't been told about, because I'm just really scared about the future of Ring of Honor right now.
You know, it's just we read about the finishes, the DQs, a lot of stuff not making sense. With booking decisions, and there's been a lot of apathy towards the show since Pierce took over in terms of fan reaction buzz on the, you know, the message board. So I think it's going to be a tough go of it going forward. And I don't know,
we both hope to prove this wrong, right? I mean, we can both say that. I hope he's great. I hope he turns out to be just what the company needs. I just don't see anything that points me that direction as of right now.
I can already tell you it's not. Just
and, you haven't pre-ordered House Show Navigation yet on DVD?
No. I'm not really. I mean, I'm not willing to go that far. The parts of one of the shows from Canada I saw, Bombed by Hate, seemed like a really good ROH show so far, but. A lot of the other shows sounded, you know, you don't want to see Bushwhacker Luke and, you know, Alex Payne and Ernie Osiris and all these guys running around and having matches on the undercard. So,
what do you think, Sean? I think everyone agreed over the last couple of years that Ring of Honor needed more, I hate to use this sort of gimmicks, but more character development and maybe more storyline, more WWE-ish type thing. And Gabe obviously was anti a lot of that stuff. Because obviously he's a big Japanese fan, and they don't do a lot of that outside of, like, Hustle and shit.
But so they're bringing in a lot of characters or adding a lot of flavor, but it's being given to the Ernie Osirises and the Rhett Tituses and the Bobby Dempsey and Shane Hagedorns when it should have been spent. I mean, your upper tier guys can use a little bit of that flavor themselves, and it's just weird that they're spending an extraordinary amount of time on the lower end of the card, which, you know, I don't think is where your attention should be spent as much, I should say.
No, it's odd that all these undercard guys are getting all this, you know, development on the site and then video packages, and no one's going to spend 1 cent to buy a DVD with these guys on it, except maybe their families, and it's nothing against them. They're just, you know, they're just not, you know, DVD purchase worthy. And you need to focus on, you know, Steen Generico and your big guns. You need to flush Davey Richards out, and you need to get Kenny Omega on as many shows as possible. And you need to start, you know, launching Tyler Black like it should have happened months ago and never did. And you need to get rid of all these bland Japanese guys that, you know, come into the company. And
I think, Sean, the Age of the Fall is almost the perfect group to set up great baby faces, because Jimmy, they don't need Tyler Black now. He'd be perfect to leave on his own. And you induct new members. You got Delirious now, who's Brody Lee. Remember, and you can bring in other guys, and as they hang around Jimmy Jacobs, they start to see, you know, the flaws, the cracks in him, and how his mind's insane, and, you know, they turn on him. And I think you have a potential to have a group that can keep getting people ready to take the next step, and nobody has yet. You know, Tyler Black's still there when I think everyone sees him as, I don't want to say bigger than the group, but he's not needed anymore. You know, the Age of the Fall is almost like the 2008 Ring of Honor's Special K, just in that you're interchangeable. You know, you can have a six-man match on the next show, and it doesn't matter which three you put in. You know what I mean? And Tyler Black needs to be in that semi-main, that main event match, because he's at that level right now. So they need to pull that trigger on him.
The fans want to see new blood at the top of the cards, and, you know, they never pulled the trigger on Tyler Black. And, you know, it should have been done months ago. Right after that pay-per-view, Tyler Black should have been Jason McGinnis as his main opposition with Danielson, I feel. Because it was clear that's what people want to see.
Yeah.
You know, just, I think, you know, I talked about feuds needing to be shorter. I mean, you need, you know, beginning, closure, and end with, you know, they can't go on a whole, I don't think you can drag things out a whole year. Just the personalities aren't strong enough.
Yeah, well, Gabe's booking snafu, MySpace blog, was all about him kind of ending the Steel Cage Warfare with Briscoe's Age of the Fall. But if I'm reading the new newswires correct, I'm pretty sure the Briscoe's Age of the Fall feud is still in full swing. I mean, I can't some of those things drive me crazy, but I'm reading through them quickly. It looks like they have these tag team matches signed or a six-man match signed here or there. Am I right or am I wrong? It seems like this feud, the never-ending feud, is still going.
Yeah. Same thing with, you know, that and the no one ever gets revenge on Larry Sweeney, and he's all over every show, and he gets overexposed.
Why aren't they putting Larry Sweeney? I just, you know, you just saying he's been on every show and exposed, it made me think, like, this wasn't what they did with Bobby Heenan in WWE, that you got small bursts of him, and it was just magical, and then they put him on commentary, and he was even better. Why hasn't Ring of Honor put Larry Sweeney behind the mic? I mean, he's so good shooting promos. You think that he would really bring something to doing that guest commentator, the Roddy Piper, Randy Savage, you know, spot, Jesse Ventura. I say try it for one show. I bet that he's biased.
Yeah. I wish they did more of that, like they did with Nigel. Just adds a great dimension to the commentary. But, I mean, we could talk about all these cosmetic things, but the bottom line is they need to start generating buzz about, you know, great matches and great storylines that separate them from the other companies. All right, let's go on to, you know, the latest video wire. I guess it clearly shows that Nigel McGuinness and Jerry Lynn are going to be a big program heading into the next year. What are your thoughts on that?
It was an interesting. It started off with Nigel and Jerry Lynn in the ring, and Nigel was almost coming across as complimentary, and then he immediately turned it around and said that the boys in the back are laughing at Jerry Lynn. I mean, he's so old, he's an embarrassment to himself. And it closed, after a bunch of other things, it closed with Jerry Lynn going through the locker room, you know, mad as all hell, to Nigel, saying, just ripping into him, and he turned to the Briscoes. Is this true? Is this what they're saying? And the Briscoes kind of backed away. And then Jerry Lynn did like what Ric Flair did on that great Raw promo when he ran into Carlito, when Carlito was leaving the building, and he's like, I don't even know who I am, and all that. And Jerry Lynn was like, why am I even in this business anymore? It was very reminiscent of that. And we just talked previously that I thought Bryan Danielson was going to face Nigel and eventually win the title, and he didn't. You know, I've never been the biggest Jerry Lynn fan. I mean, he's certainly serviceable. But judging by this video wire, it certainly looks like, you know, Jerry Lynn versus Nigel is the direction they're going in 2009. And what do you place the odds of Jerry Lynn holding the Ring of Honor strap within the next, like, 6 months, Sean? It seems to me very, very high.
I think it's almost inevitable that he's the one that unseats McGinnis. And I think he's still serviceable as a B-show challenger to McGinnis, but I think I don't think he's the A-level guy that's going to capture the hearts and minds of the DVD-buying audience. But, you know, he might be over in their markets like Philadelphia, and I don't know. I just don't think it's the answer, but maybe I'll be proven wrong.
Certain spots in WWE and TNA, Sean, and he didn't. I mean, certainly he was booked to be in a certain place, and probably maybe for good reasons, but I don't think he set any records for fans droving in to see him on these much higher watch shows.
I had a long, you know how Wade is, like, loves to take the other side of the coin, and he's trying to tell me what a great idea it would be for him to be the ROH champion. I told him that he would never even get over an ECW as champion, and that was when he's in his prime, so... Would be
well, Wade.
This is coming from
came from Minnesota, right? So Wade has a clear affinity for people that he saw on those indie shows up there.
You know, this is coming from me, who is one of the biggest Jerry Lynn fans ever.
My vote, Sean. You know. I mean, I hope Morishima. Who's the Japanese? Kenta Marufuji. That's it. I think he's got a shot coming up. And you know how I've been against Noah guys since day one. I would much, much rather see him holding the Ring of Honor strap than Jerry Lynn. I think you're exactly right. Jerry Lynn's perfect spot is on a pay-per-view match against Nigel in Philadelphia. The crowd will be so behind him, you know, and Nigel scores that like the Samoa Joe in England against Nigel, scores that 1-2-3 in front of their home crowd, but it's such a great match. You know, everyone gives them the respect at the end. But him holding the title in 2009, oh, my God.
I would much rather see Tyler Black at the top of the card. I think he would have a lot of fresh challengers, and I don't know. It seems like they're running that into the ground because they're having him feud with Aries now, and I don't know. I think he should be, you know, losing matches and being built up as had a lot of challenges, you know, as champion. And
if you're trying to draw in new fans, and it sucks because how to judge Jerry Lynn. And you put him as your champ, and people who only watch TNA and WWE, all they read is online and see the Observer, the Torch, and they see Jerry Lynn's the ROH champion, and they remember him as just being another guy in TNA, never that successful, and WWE even less because they kept him in light heavyweight, but they pretty much pushed him as a jobber of sorts.
Yeah.
I just don't think it gives the company credibility, even though he is a great wrestler. I don't want to knock his matches. He's very good. But when you have a Tyler Black at the front, they're like, yeah, I've seen this guy once or twice, so he's getting a lot of good buzz. You know, maybe I should check this out. It just doesn't seem to be a good direction.
You know, the indies, the buzz that, you know, does appear from the indies are from guys like Kenny Omega and, you know, Tyler Black are the two top names you hear right now. And I think those two at the top would be really good. Kenny Omega amazed me in his match from Canada. You know, they put him in there with Black and Danielson, a three-way dance, and it was awesome. And, you know, he seems to have a lot of charisma, a look, and I think he'll be a star one day, and I know he's certainly a draw for JAPW. I don't get it sometimes. I don't think anyone other than an audience of one wants to see Lynn as the champion right now.
I agree. Okay.
All right. The Samoa Joe Tyler Black DVD is going to be on the, match is going to be added to the Dayton release in time for them to sell it at a Final Battle Weekend coming up next weekend, actually. your thoughts on them adding this match to the Dayton DVD.
As for a company, it's, I guess, a smart move, as you're going to get a lot of people to buy a DVD they were probably never, ever going to buy. And as a fan, I'm torn because I probably want to see it either on the pay-per-view as taped, because that's going to be a much better show, a two-disc affair. All their pay-per-view releases on DVD are must-buys, if you ask me. Or possibly I would have gone with a video-on-demand type download type thing, because this is the match I want to see, not whatever was on that card. But it's hard to complain with a company doing what they should to make money, and this is a great idea financially for the company. And I hope this show, which I haven't seen, the date, is it Dayton, you said?
Yeah, it's not out yet.
Yeah, but I hope it's a good show, that when you get the people who are going to buy it because they wanted to see Samoa Joe back, or they heard a lot about it, they want to see the new production values from that pay-per-view, I hope that the other show they're going to contrast it with, the Dayton show, doesn't turn them off thinking, well, I don't need to watch Ring of Honor anymore. You know, because if you would have gotten certain people to try it out on the pay-per-view, they would have been like, wow, I'm missing some stuff, because that pay-per-view taping sounded, you know, pretty good at parts. And this is the show.
The Dayton show is the show that got a lot of bad buzz. And, the undercard featured Go Shiozaki going over in a four-corner survival that with Grizzly Redwood, Sammy Callahan, and Rhett Titus. The Briscoes against Irish Airborne. Roderick Strong and Chris Hero ending in a no contest. And the three-way non-title match.
The three-way title to a non-title. That's the show? Oh, my
yep.
God. All right. I just think, to me, it's a short-term good idea to get money. Long-term, it could be very bad, because you could possibly be turning off some people that would have given you a chance, a second chance. There's probably maybe some former Ring of Honor fans who followed Joe to TNA and are coming back to try it out again, and they might just say, well, this is worse than when I left it. What's the point of this?
I think it's a tough situation. I think the download idea is not a bad idea. Maybe even charge $10 for it or something. I think it's just something they had to do. They had to get that match out there before the, you know, the pay-per-view doesn't air till, you know, the middle of January, which means the DVD is not going to be released till sometime in February. So you've got almost, you know, 3 months go by between the Joe match and then the release. So, I mean, it's a smart business decision, but it's too bad they couldn't put it on a different release, I guess, is the best way to put it.
I hope it doesn't backfire, because, I mean, I can see the pros. I just hope they saw the cons and when they're looking at it.
Okay. The next item up is this has become kind of a popular sale on the ROH site, the Big Ten sale. There's 110 ROH DVDs on sale for $10 each. Starting with stuff from 2002 all the way through some of the earlier shows from 2008 and including also the Samoa Joe CM Punk shoot. And so you get a lot of really good shows on here for a low price point, including the Rising Above pay-per-view, which counts towards this year's best match listings, because it was taped so late in 07. But that has McGuinness versus Aries. The whole pay-per-view is yours for $10. Final Battle 2007, which was another pretty good show, is $10. And almost all other good shows from the past are on sale for $10. What do you think of this sale?
It's great, and they have a lot of general admission tickets to all the upcoming shows for $10, and you can't beat a live experience at Ring of Honor. But what I got to thinking, Sean, because right now I've been following a lot of news down here in Florida, because obviously the recession's hitting everybody, but places like Orlando, which is a tourist capital, are just getting hammered. And companies like Disney, they're putting a lot of deals out there. But one thing Disney won't do is lower their ticket prices, because they feel once they do, there's no going back. It's hard to charge full price again. Do you think this never-ending stream of sales on Ring of Honor are hurting the company's chance to charge what WWE and TNA charge their DVDs, which is a standard price, and you might get a discount at Amazon or whatever. But for ROH fans, why would you want to ever buy anything at full price when if you wait a week or you wait 2 weeks, there's some crazy deal that's going to come along? Last week it was buy three, get two free. This week it's Big Ten. And for a fan, that's great. But as a company, Sean, do you think it's smart to be having a nonstop amount of sales?
I think they have to with the economy, and I don't. I think it can only help them because they just, you know, they're bringing in money that wasn't coming in before by having these sales. So it's just something they have to do, and it's a telling sign when they have to, you know, buy three, get two free. It's a really good deal.
Definitely.
And, you know, PWG did a five for $40, which is also an awesome deal. You know, I think they're just doing what they can to make money right now and, you know, get as much as they can in. And I think, I mean, they've always run sales. It's just...
Yeah, but that's what I mean. Do you think there's a market out there for someone who's going to pay $20 for a Ring of Honor DVD? Or is that person gone because they know they'll never have to pay that money?
Yeah, I don't think there is. And usually, even in the past, a lot of people figured out they could wait for the sales and get what they wanted within, you know, a week or two of the release of any DVD. So
This is probably why you need to get that subscription plan up so that the people don't have to think about things like that. You know what I mean? They're already committed to buying the next whatever,
I'd be interested.
The next month, next year, the next whatever.
I'd be interested to hear about that. How that's doing anyway.
Yeah, not their subscription plan. I think that one sucks, but I mean,
yeah,
the ones that you and Wade Keller and I have, you know, all have different versions of what we would do. I think that's what they need to go to. Otherwise people are just going to eventually do what TNA viewers, just not buy the pay-per-views. You know, they're going to make that decision and just decide against it.
All right. Let's close out with, Gabe's Book of ROH Secrets DVD that's coming out from kayfabecommentaries.com. How do you think it's going to do?
First of all, I like that you came full circle, Gabe, to start the show, Gabe, to close the show. That's one of Gabe's big things in booking. So you've learned a lot.
The tribute.
We're paying homage to Gabe. I'm undecided on this DVD, Sean, because at first, when it was first announced, we kind of talked about this. I thought it would be Gabe going over his career in Ring of Honor, and I certainly want to hear about the CZW stuff that you mentioned before. Several of his stuff with Loki, his interactions with him, what broke down. You know, there's a lot of very interesting things that happened over the last 6 years, and he doesn't even have to touch Rob Feinstein. I understand avoiding that forever. That's up to him. But there's a lot of other stuff I want to hear. But this, what it appears to me, is it's he's getting out his book of what he was going to do from Final Battle and early 2009 or maybe the whole 2009 year. And to me, that is not as interesting. It could be neat. It could be a great DVD, but it's not the one that I wanted to watch originally. What have you heard?
Just what everyone else has. I think he reveals a lot about his past plans and what he had planned for the future. So I'll wait until we see it. But I heard he... came clean on a lot of stuff, so...
I wonder, will he admit that his... I'm going to use the word obsession with Japan didn't help him at all as a Ring of Honor booker, because I think that did not help the company whatsoever.
Well, we'll have to wait till it comes out, so...
KayfabeCommentaries.com.
Yep. Well, that closes out our All ROH edition, so for Derek... This is Torch Thomas, Sean Radkin, signing off.